His image now haunts us. His laugh torments us, and his fate terrifies us. How did 3-year-old William Tyrrell simply vanish from his grandma's front yard? 1 minute, little Spider-Man is playing chasies with his sister. The next, he's gone.
Who would be driving in here?
It's a dead-end street. It's obviously a dead-end street. You're coming up here for a reason here. You don't come up here by accident or by chance.
The fact that he's in the Spider-Man suit helps your scenario too, doesn't it? Because it's very easy for a stranger to say, hey, Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think the Spider-Man suit plays a part in this, in that, exactly, any stranger could come up and you could get a rapport happening with William straight away by calling him Spider-Man. And then that person has decided to take a 3-year-old child. And that's that, those two worlds colliding, and I say it's like evil meeting innocence.
We imagine what was going through his head when that was happening. He would have been beside himself, he would have been petrified.
That tears my heart out.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really disturbing.
And he would have been desperately, desperate for us to come and get him. Absolutely desperate.
He would have been thinking, what are they coming for me? Where are they? Why aren't they here? I mean,
but after William was taken, where did he go? There are only two ways out of this neighbourhood. Both are very easy routes for the abductor to go unnoticed. And choosing which way right now is pure guesswork, making William's disappearance an even greater mystery.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
Today we are talking about the abduction of William Tyrrell. The episode is called Taken. 3-year-old William Tyrrell, his 4-year-old sister, and his parents traveled from Sydney to Kendal, Australia on September 11, 2014 for a visit with his grandmother. The trip was a surprise for the children, who were delighted to be picked up early from daycare. It was between 10 and 10:25 a.m. the next day when William was taken from his grandmother's yard while playing chasies, or what we in the U.S. would call hide-and-seek, with his sister. Now, the search effort for little William has been extensive. As the 2-year anniversary of his disappearance approaches, and in the spirit of Wednesdays for William, a grassroots campaign to help locate William, we will discuss his case with an eye toward shedding further light on this incredibly sad story of a childhood abduction. So first of all, I'm going to do a couple of 5-star reviews, then we'll get to the beer review, and then we'll start our discussion. Sound like a plan, Dick?
I like the plan.
Okay. So the first 5-star review I'm going to read today is called I'm Hooked, and it's written by Debbie B. I am an avid listener and stumbled upon this gem. Dick and Jill have a great dialogue, and their voices are so soothing, unlike a lot of podcast narrators. I do not agree with the review about doing something original. This is original. You've got a doctor and his wife reviewing beer and talking crime. Gotta love it. Well, thank you, Debbie B.
That's a very nice review.
Yeah.
I like that. Thanks, Debbie B.
So, Debbie B., welcome to the brewery. And the next 5-star review I'm going to read is called Well-Researched True Crime Podcast. And this is by Zoe Trope 1107. I appreciate the different perspectives from co-hosts Dick and Jill and love hearing a female podcaster's take on crime. Dick's medical background allows for them to include information from sources, i.e. patient background, coroner's reports, that other podcasters would miss. Overall, the podcast is well-researched, and I enjoy listening to each episode. So thank you, Zoe Trope 1107.
Another good review. Thank you.
Yeah, and welcome to the brewery. Now, before we get to the beer review, I'd just like to talk to you guys again a little bit about Team Tie Grabber. Some awesome changes are happening in Team Tie Grabber, which you can get to if you visit our website at www.tiegrabber.com. Now, this past week, I've been mailing out stickers, coasters, and snifters to our Team Tie Grabber members, and it's been a lot of fun. And this is just a start. As some of you may know, Dick and I also do a lesser-known podcast, Outcasting, which is a recap and discussion of the new Robert Kirkman show on Cinemax. It's called Outcast. But next week is Outcast's finale, so that's going to free us up to create some other new content for True Crime Brewery. So for Team Tie Grabber members, we'll be creating True Crime Brewery episodes without the five-star review reads and please like this for your money, help, that kind of stuff. That won't be in there. And also we're going to do a podcast watching and discussing the new classic Love Actually for a holiday episode in December.
Aw, that's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we watch it every year anyway. It's one of our favorites.
We do. I know the whole movie by heart.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about it and do a podcast on it, and maybe it'll be fun to listen to, maybe it won't, but we're going to give it a try.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Now, Team Tie Grabber is important to us mainly because we don't want to fill our podcast with ads, but we want to keep the independent quirkiness that is us for everyone who likes our style to enjoy. It's a very affordable team to join. You can sign up for as little as $2 a month, which is just shockingly cheap. And I can't think of many other places where your $2 or $3 or $5 a month would be more appreciated. Certainly not by your local coffee vendor or your adult children. They may scoff at your Washington and Lincoln-faced bills, but not us. We'll respond with much love and gratitude.
Don't forget Hamilton.
Okay. All right, Dick, do you want to go ahead and get to your beer? I am done with my pleading and begging.
Okay.
Okay.
So this was a little bit of a difficult thing to do because I don't drink very many Australian beers.
Sure.
In fact, I've drunk very few Australian beers. But anyway, I found one I had a few years ago and resurrected for tonight's little talk called Hop Hog.
Okay.
Nice name.
It is a nice name.
It's brewed by Feral, F-E-R-A-L, Wild.
Right.
Brewing Company in Baskerville, Australia. And it's billed as an American IPA, which I think I reviewed one of that style last week. But anyway, just to refresh people's memories, American IPAs are big herbal and or citrus hops. They tend to be bitter. They tend to be medium-bodied with a solid malt background. The Hop Hog certainly fills that bill. It's a clear gold color, nice little small white head that leaves a good amount of lacing. Aromas mostly pine, some faint citrus, and sweet malt. And the taste follows the nose. It's mostly pine, a little bit of grapefruit, background of caramel malt.
Hmm.
Lighter-bodied, nicely bittered. I think it competes pretty well with American IPAs, particularly West Coast IPAs.
Yeah, so you don't see anything markedly different about it because it's from Australia.
Not this one.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you. That was a great review.
Oh, but wait.
What?
Wait a minute. I couldn't do just this one review.
I
hope you'll let me do one more, and that's for Foster's Lager.
Oh.
Which is just an iconic Australian beer. Everybody's seen the ads about Foster's Australian for beer.
Right.
Which I've just mangled that accent. But anyway, it's a beer that everybody associates with Australia. And I thought I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Foster's.
Sure.
So okay. I hope you'll indulge me and let me do this quickie beer review on Foster's. It won't be long, I promise.
All right.
So Foster's Lager is brewed by Foster's Group Limited, which is in South Bank, Australia. It's what's considered an American adjunct lager. Now, these are not very good beers.
Okay.
So they tend to be lighter-bodied, pale, and fizzy. They're low in bitterness, they're thin in malts, and they're moderate in alcohol. The flavor is less noticeable, and it's more focused on mass production and consumption of the beer. And they call it an adjunct lager because the cost of production of the beer is cut by adding things like cereal grains, rice, or corn to the brew.
I never knew anyone did that.
Yes.
I thought there was a German rule or something that you couldn't add other stuff to beer.
Right, that's German.
That's only in Germany?
Yeah.
Ah.
I mean, look at Budweiser. They do the same thing.
I didn't know that. That's all new to me. Yeah. It might be new to some of our listeners, too.
Possibly. So good old Foster's Lager is a clear pale yellow color with a small white head. It's got a faintly grainy aroma, probably corn, a vaguely sweet taste, and it's drinkable in the sense that water is drinkable.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, Foster's, but I don't like your beer,
but I
had to review it.
They do have that cool big can, so let's give them credit for that. That's pretty cool.
They do.
Okay. Well, thank you. That was great to get two reviews.
My pleasure.
All right.
Even though one was kind of slamming the beer, but I just felt like I couldn't do an Australian beer without mentioning Foster's.
Okay, but you didn't really like Fosters.
Not too many people do. No, I shouldn't put it that
I'm
way.
I'm sure some people do.
A lot of people do, but it's not a particularly good tasting beer.
Okay. All right, well, let's open that Hop Hog then. That looks good.
Yes, let's do that one.
Okay, let's take our snifters and our Hop Hog and go on down to the quiet end of the bar.
Let's get this thing going.
And we'll talk about the abduction of William Tyrrell. Now, William Tyrrell, he will have been missing for 2 years on September 12th of this year. He was 3 years old when he disappeared from his grandmother's yard, where he'd been playing with his mom and his sister. His mom and his Nana sat on the back porch while he played with his sister. His mom has said that he was running around and roaring, and when he rounded the corner of the house, she could hear him roaring, and that was something he really liked to do when he played. He would roar like a lion. When William's mom hadn't heard him for about 5 minutes, she went looking for him all over the yard. It was a large yard, which backed onto the street, which was a one-way street. Now, there was a woodsy area across the street, which is part of the Kendall State Forest. While William's mother was searching for him, William's father arrived back at the house after going to Lakewood on business that morning. A neighbor, William's mother, and William's father searched the property for about 15 minutes before William's mother called 000, which is the Australian equivalent of our 911 service. Now, by the evening of September 12th of 2014, hundreds of police, state emergency services, rural fire service, and members of the community had searched into the night, and specialists from the sex crime squad of the police department quickly became involved as well. After the home, the yard, the woods, the waterways, and the dams were thoroughly searched, it was clear that William had not just wandered off. William's disappearance was a criminal case of abduction. A group was established with investigators then, specially trained and experienced in disappearances of young children, and these investigators supported the police and they supported the community in the search for William. After 5 days of searching, still no sign of William was found. So according to William's mother, there were two cars parked on the dead-end road on the morning of September 12th, and she described the cars as a white station wagon and an older grayish-colored sedan. And these two unfamiliar cars were parked strangely because they were between two driveways on the grandmother's road, and both cars had their driver's side windows down. The cars were unknown to any of the neighbors that were interviewed. The police have eyed these unaccounted-for vehicles with some suspicion because there's no known logical reason why these two cars would have been there that day.
Well, you can infer from that the timing of this whole thing. The kid hadn't been quiet for just a few minutes when Mom noticed that he wasn't making noise. So this happened in virtually the blink of an eye.
Sure. I think that's all it takes if you have the right, you know, if the right person, the right opportunity. Right.
And these cars, these suspicious cars, would seem to me were kind of waiting for something to happen so they could snatch the little kid.
Yeah. So do you think that they came there for that purpose, though, or were they, a lot of it could be a crime of opportunity that they were just there, they saw the child and pulled over.
Yeah, but there's no reason for them to be there. It's a cul-de-sac. It's not a through road or anything.
Right.
So you're in that area for a reason.
That's true.
And I think the way I would look at it is that somebody who knew that the little kids were going to be there were staking the place out in the hopes of stealing one of them.
I think you might be right. It certainly does seem like that. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to get to our persons of interest, and a lot of that does correspond with these two cars, and there's a lot to talk about there, so we'll get to that.
Right.
So according to reports, also at 9 a.m. that morning, a green or gray sedan drove past the grandmother's home while William and his sister were riding bikes in the driveway, so that certainly could have been when this person or persons spotted the children at that point at 9 o'clock, and then they could have been hanging around after that.
So this sedan came in and drove out of the cul-de-sac?
Yeah, it drove into the dead-end road. It did a U-turn in the neighbor's driveway, and it drove out of the neighborhood. So it didn't do anything purposeful when it was there.
Okay.
I mean, of course, it could always be someone lost, but...
So again, yeah, I mean, it's either someone who's casing the joint.
Right.
Or who got lost. But
yeah, but it just seems strange that it was a gray or green sedan after hearing that there was a gray sedan parked across the street in this odd way.
Doesn't it sound weird?
Yeah, that does sound like a bit of a coincidence.
It sure does.
Yeah, now...
And this is a small town. I mean, it's...
Very small, 1,000 people or less, you know, was the population.
Everybody knows everybody else, so who would accidentally drive down that cul-de-sac, that dead end?
It would have to be someone that's not around there.
Right.
Right.
Or it's somebody who knew what they were looking for and just wanted to case the place and see what the opportunities might come up as.
Sure, absolutely, it could be that.
Particularly since that was one of the two cars that were noticed by people.
That certainly makes it seem likely, doesn't it?
Sure.
The two sightings.
Yep.
Now, also, a four-wheel drive vehicle was seen driving out of the neighborhood at around 10:30 a.m. And I don't know if this could be the white car, which was kind of a station wagon, if that would be the four-wheel drive. But the same vehicle was seen later speeding down a nearby street in Kendall. So it left the neighborhood at 10:30. That is pretty close. I think that William was unaccounted for around 10:25 is when Mom noticed that.
Okay. So, but there's no recollection of the color of this SUV or four-wheel drive vehicle.
Well, the information I read didn't say, but I did read more about this white car being with the gray sedan, so I'm thinking it could be the same car, but I wasn't able to find out if it is.
Right.
From my research.
No, I mean, if you think about a gray sedan initially, and then a gray sedan and a white station wagon being parked there.
Right.
And then some form of station wagon SUV being seen after the fact.
Yes.
That all kind of makes you suspicious.
Sure it does. The police have revealed that they have known about these vehicle sightings since early in the investigation, of course, but as part of their investigative strategy, the information about these vehicles was released to the public just in 2015.
Yeah, because I always think that the police would like to keep more information private and be able to solve the crime a little quicker.
Yeah, unless it gets to the point where getting the information out to the public is your best bet.
Right.
Or when you're desperate enough that that's your only hope, really.
Sure, but you don't want to be putting stuff out and be inundated with phone calls from eyewitnesses or people that have other stories to tell, and that just impedes the investigation.
That's true. And I'm sure there are a lot of old gray sedans and there are a lot of white station wagons or four-wheel drives around. Yeah. Now, just to make it clear, William's family has been cleared of any involvement in this case. And his disappearance is believed to be a stranger abduction done by an opportunistic stranger who may be connected to a pedophile ring. Now, the police have also said that William could still be alive in the hands of a group of people suspected of pedophile activity. So I'm not sure exactly where they're getting all this that's making them lead that way, but there is a lot of information on the persons of interest, and there's some reason why they're looking at them, obviously.
Right. I think you can read into that line of investigation and looking at the persons of interest.
Right.
That there's a definite pedophile slant to this.
That's what they're definitely thinking, yeah.
But, and I would certainly agree with you that it seems like it was an abduction. I mean, things happen so quickly.
Well, yeah, what else could have happened? If he'd wandered off, he would have been found.
They would have found him one way or another.
Correct.
So he didn't just wander off.
No.
And a parent didn't, or a relative didn't take him.
No, the police don't suspect any family.
Father wasn't even back there yet.
Right.
The mother and grandmother were together.
Yes.
So that seems like leaves a stranger coming by and abducting the child.
Yeah. Now the only question is, was it someone who just happened to be coming by? Probably not, because as we said, it's a cul-de-sac.
I can't believe it was someone who just happened to be on that cul-de-sac, particularly with the information about the vehicles that were spotted by people.
Well, it makes you wonder if someone knew the children were there, or, you know, why would the gray sedan, assuming that someone was involved in that car, why would it drive by with the children were there? What gave the person the reason to even think they were there before it arrived the first time, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying, and as we'll see when you start talking about the people or persons of interest, you're going to find that one of them probably knew that little kids were going to be there.
Right. And any way you put this together, it really couldn't have been one person then, if we go down that road. It had to be a collaboration of pedophiles, which is a horrifying thought.
Well, I don't know that it necessarily has to be. I mean, the fact that there were two cars there would certainly make you think that there was more than one person.
Well, there were the two cars there, and then there was the third person who had a different vehicle. But let's just,
maybe had a different vehicle.
Sure.
We're not sure. I mean, we might be sure that this gray sedan was spotted twice, once driving by and once parked.
Yes.
And it might be that the white station wagon and the four-wheel drive or the SUV or whatever might be the same car.
We don't
know. We don't have enough information there.
No.
But yeah, it sounds like there's at least a couple people involved.
Yeah, it does. It does. Police have interviewed dozens of people.
I'll
and that includes
have.
Many convicted pedophiles. A Current Affair Australia, that was a show where they did a special on William's disappearance and the investigation. And they reported in 2015 that there were 20 registered sex offenders living in the Kendall area at the time when William was abducted.
Yeah, that's to this American guy, that's kind of mind-boggling. I mean, this is a small rural area.
It is, yep.
And the population of Kendall, you said, was around 1,000?
Yeah.
And what do you suppose the surrounding area is for population? Maybe another few thousand?
Yeah, who knows? Not.
And there's 20 sex offenders there?
I know, it's hard to believe.
So how do they get such a concentration of sex offenders?
Well, that we don't really know. But let's go over these persons of interest a little bit, okay?
All right.
Okay, so the first one is this Bill Spedding. Now, he's the washing machine repairman. And he has no child pornography or sex offender convictions in his background.
Now, did we mention that he was repairing the grandmother's washing machine?
Well, yes, he was the washing machine repairman, I said.
Well, you said that, but I'm not sure we talked about that
We
earlier.
Haven't gone over that, no. No, he was working on her washing machine. Was it 4 days before? I think it was 4 days before.
A few days before.
Yeah, and he had ordered a part for them.
Right.
And then William's mother had called him early that morning that William disappeared, I believe, to ask if the part had come in.
Yeah.
So that makes you wonder, did he know then that the children were there? Was he familiar with the children?
Well, I'm thinking that he likely would be. I mean, he was there a few days before to repair the machine, and maybe Grandma said something about my daughter and son-in-law and grandkids are coming to visit.
Right, right.
And then maybe when he spoke with the daughter, the mother of the child, he figured out that they were there.
Sure. That's possible. Definitely possible.
Yep.
So he's a 63-year-old, and he was the first person of interest that was mentioned. His house was thoroughly searched. His septic system was drained. He also owned a pawnbroker shop in Laurieton at the time, and that was thoroughly searched. Also, cars, his phone, a mattress, and a computer were seized from his home.
Sounds like they put a full court press on this guy. It looks and sounds like they really closely investigated him.
Sure, they did.
And they didn't find anything.
Well, the one odd thing was that they did find a Spider-Man toy in his van. Now, we haven't even talked about the fact that William was wearing a Spider-Man
his
outfit that day.
His favorite superhero.
Right.
So he was running around pretending to be Spider-Man. He dressed as Spider-Man a lot.
He did. He did.
So I would find that interesting. Does he have an explanation for where the Spider-Man figure came from?
He said that another child gave it to him to keep him company in the truck, in his van.
Well, that raises a few red flags.
It does, except the parents don't say that any of his toys were missing or that he had a Spider-Man toy with him when he was taken.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Could mean something, but maybe it doesn't. Could be a coincidence. But he lives in Bonnie Hills, so that's about 20 kilometers from Kendall.
Okay.
Now
that's like 12 miles.
Yep. So what, like a 15-minute drive?
Right.
About that. And at the one-year anniversary of William's disappearance, he released a video on YouTube that denied that he had any involvement. He said that he didn't come back that day because the part wasn't in, and it had been 8 days after the first visit, that he went back to finish the washing machine repairs. So he claims he wasn't there that day. He had no reason to be.
Well, yeah, he didn't have any reason to be except to snatch a kid.
Sure.
I mean, he wasn't there to fix the washer because he didn't have the part yet.
Right. But
I got to tell you that this, of the four people or persons, I keep saying people of interest, persons of interest.
Yeah.
This is the guy I like.
Well, okay.
You know, because I think he's the one guy who knew, or probably knew, that there were going to be young kids there.
Right.
And he has a Spider-Man figure that I don't have an explanation for.
Yeah, I don't know if we can say that that means anything, because we don't know. It wasn't a toy that William had.
It might not have been, but maybe it was a toy that he had to entice William over.
But how would he know William liked Spider-Man before that day?
I'm jumping a little bit here, but yeah. Maybe in the conversations with Grandma about grandkids coming, that somehow it was let slip that little William was a Spider-Man aficionado.
I mean, it definitely could have been. We don't know. There could have been a picture of him on the refrigerator in his Spider-Man outfit.
Yeah, I mean, there's different things, but just the fact that this kid loved to dress up as Spider-Man.
Yes.
And there's a Spider-Man figure found in this guy's possession.
It does seem odd, yeah.
And he's the one that had the most direct contact with the family.
Right.
Or with the grandma.
Yeah.
And he's the one I'm liking.
You're liking as the suspect.
I am.
Okay. All right.
I hope that doesn't give things away too quickly.
Well, no, because we don't know the answer. So you can't give anything away when we don't know what happened, right?
Okay. But we haven't talked about the other three persons of interest.
No.
Maybe there's one of them that could be involved somehow.
Well, they certainly have more shady backgrounds.
Don't they?
But the thing is, Bill Spedding is the only one with a connection to the grandmother's house, like you said. But he claims he was not in Kendall on September 12th. And a lot of his alibi, though, relies on his wife and a friend. So Spedding and his wife said they had coffee in a shop in Laurieton that morning. And then later on, they walked across the road from the coffee shop to their grandson's school to attend his school presentation. Now, he was 20 minutes away from Kendall, basically, like we said, 20 kilometers, 15, 20 minutes. And a friend of Bill Spedding said that he went to a job later that afternoon in Dunbogen. Now, that's another 15 minutes or so, kind of like a triangle.
Okay.
But he claimed that a family friend had taken pictures with Bill Spedding and that he was in them at the school presentation. But Bill Spedding was never able to present those pictures.
So let's have some further proof.
Yeah, we don't have any proof.
So we don't have anyone else that confirms that he and his wife are having coffee in the coffee shop.
No.
And we don't have anyone that can say, yes, I saw him at his grandson's recital. And we don't have anyone that has...
Well, we have the friend and the wife.
Well, but...
Those are the only ones.
Then this is the same friend who said he went to work with him?
I don't know if he went with him, but he said that he knows that he went out to a job in Dunbogen that day.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I need more confirmatory evidence on this.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Tony Jones. He's another one of the persons of interest. And he's one that's currently in jail, or at least he was at my last check.
Was he in jail when the little boy disappeared?
No.
Okay.
Now he's...
Let's talk about him.
Sure. Now, he's a convicted sex offender. And he has an amazing 90 convictions in his life over the past four decades, including assault of a child, assaults against women, and aggravated indecent assault on a minor.
How old's this guy?
Two counts. Well, I don't know. He must be at least 60-ish. He must be around the same age as the other guy.
He's a career criminal.
Yes, definitely.
That's almost mind-boggling. 90 convictions?
Yeah.
I mean, he should be in jail forever.
Yeah, I don't know how he keeps getting out. And I don't think he's in jail forever for this current visit in jail. I don't think is permanent either. I think maybe the Australians are a little more lenient than
maybe
we
they
are.
Have different rules than the United States.
They might. And we kind of tend to put a lot of people in prison.
We do.
Yeah.
Right? Aren't we the leaders?
Probably, yep.
Okay.
Now, Tony Jones told police he was out bush collecting scrap metal on the day William disappeared. So this is something that does not give any kind of alibi. There's no way to prove that.
No.
So it's not a very good excuse. But the interesting thing is that this Bill Spedding has links to Tony Jones.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of links?
They used to live across the street from each other in New South Wales in the town of Wellington.
So they must have known each other.
Being yes.
Across the street neighbors.
Mm-hmm. And Tony Jones lived in Warhope, which is about 30 minutes north of Kendall at the time of the abduction.
What kind of car does he drive?
Aha. I think it was the white one that they said was his.
Okay. Well.
So his car does match one of the suspicious cars.
Possibly. But
yeah. Well, it generally matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, some of his family members told investigators that when he came home on that afternoon of September 12th, he was in a drunken state. And he didn't have any excuse for where he had been drinking or who he was with.
Yeah, he was supposed to be out collecting stuff in the bush.
Yeah, yeah, but he came home drunk.
Maybe he brought a bunch of beer with him or liquor with him, because, I mean, collecting scrap in the bush must not be much fun.
So you got to drink while you do it?
Yeah.
Well, his family has disowned him since they found out about his child sex offenses, since those were made public. So they don't want anything to do with him.
No. That's right, because you're going to bring this up at some point about the way Australia handles sex offenders.
Yeah, they don't have the law where they have to register and then people can look up online where they live. And they don't seem to have the law either where they have to be a certain distance away from schools and things. And we'll get to one of them was actually hauntingly, terrifyingly close to a school.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's very interesting.
Yeah.
There was something I read or heard that Australia is divided into states, like the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And every state but one has a law that says that you don't identify sex offenders.
Yeah, it's actually against the law to tell people where a sex offender lives.
Except for one of the states.
Yeah.
That you can do it.
And maybe those laws will be changing. I'm not sure how I feel about it, because sometimes if there's like someone who was 19 and had a 15-year-old girlfriend and they're labeled a sex offender, and then they spend the rest of their life with everyone knowing that, knowing where they live, that doesn't seem right to me.
No, I think there's still a lot of work to do to better define what a sex offender is.
Yeah, I think there are different levels, though, aren't there?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's
a
global thing or
of a 19-year-old hooking up with a 15-year-old.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't even classify that as a sex offend.
Sure, but sometimes it is.
I know.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I think that doesn't seem right. But then when you see someone who's really hurt children, definitely we should know where he lives. If he should even be out in public anymore, that's another thing we can talk about. Because I'm not sure that they should be out.
Well, you're talking to the wrong person here.
Why?
Well, I'm a pediatrician.
So that means that you don't want them out.
I don't want them out. I don't want them anywhere near where kids are.
Yeah, I think most people feel that way. And, you know, just this month, I learned that the family of Tony Jones told investigators that he had told them he was going to visit another convicted child sex offender, Paul Bickford, on that day, September 12th, when he returned home drunk. And remember that he told police that he'd spent the day in the bush collecting scrap metal.
So we have differing stories.
So he told a different story to his family,
which
was that he was meeting Paul Bickford, who's another person of interest, so we should probably mention him before we get too far ahead of ourselves. So Tony Jones, he was an active member of a group called GAPA, G-A-P-A, which is Grandparents as Parents Again. And that was a support group for grandparents who are left to care for their grandchildren for whatever reason. And this is where he met Paul Bickford.
Well, this GAPA sounds like the perfect front for a pedophile ring.
Sure does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. We're going to take care of these poor kids that don't have parents anymore, or they're out of the parents' lives for whatever reason.
And
we're going to help take care of them.
It's a way to find vulnerable children, wouldn't it be? Yeah.
I don't like that.
No. Paul Bickford, when Tony Jones was in GAPA with him, Paul Bickford was actually the president of GAPA, and he is serving a 2-year suspended sentence, and that's going to finish, I think, in 3 months, and that's for indecent assault of an 11-year-old girl with Asperger's syndrome. Now, he molested this girl while he was out driving her to the candy shop. So how disgusting is that?
You can't even describe how disgusting that is.
Yeah. So he and Tony Jones knew each other, and Bill Spedding and Tony Jones knew each other. So this whole, the connection between these guys is so scary.
1 degree of separation for all these three.
Yeah.
What about the other one?
The other one is Derek Nichols. I don't think I know as much about him, but he was first placed on the Child Protection Register in Tasmania in 1985 for sexual assault of an 11-year-old boy. In 2007 in Victoria, he was convicted of possessing child pornography. And then he did live in Kendall in 2014 and 2015. And in 2015, he had a conviction for possession of child abuse material. Now, he's been interviewed by police as well, and he says he was 15 kilometers away in Dunbogen that day, which is where Bill Spedding was supposed to be doing a job.
So does this last guy have an alibi other than saying he was in Dunbogen?
No, no. He doesn't.
Okay.
But what else did I know about him? I think that might be all I know about him. Paul Bickford, though, he says he's been interviewed twice about William Tyrrell's abduction. And he claims not to have any information about it, of course. And he told Australia's A Current Affair that if he knew anything, he would definitely notify authorities right away.
Of course
he would. So we don't need to worry about him.
No, because he's a good citizen.
Right.
Is he the one with the 90 convictions? Or is he the other one?
No, that's Tony Jones. Paul Bickford was the president of GAPA.
Oh, he's the GAPA president.
Right.
With no convictions.
No, he has convictions.
Okay.
All three of them have convictions, except Bill Spedding, the fourth one, doesn't. All three of the others do have convictions.
They're just a nice group of guys.
Yeah. And there was one of them whose backyard, when he lived in Kendall, backed right up to a school. I might not have taken notes on that, but it was part of A Current Affair when he interviewed
them. Right, you had mentioned that.
Yeah.
And that's part of that kind of backwards idea of how Australia looks at sex offenders, that they can live next to schools.
Yeah.
That's chilling.
It is chilling. So under New South Wales law, the pedophiles are protected. It's illegal to reveal where a convicted sex offender is living. And disturbingly, it was Derek Nichols' house. When he was living in Kendall, he had a yard which backed right onto a schoolyard. And that was also, it was in the Kendall area. And like we said earlier, there were 20 sex offenders living within the same postal code as William's grandmother.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Were there any other kids missing during this time?
Not that I know of. No.
Okay.
Not in that area, at least.
Maybe he was behaving.
Who knows? I just wonder if all four of them, or at least three of them, weren't in on something.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough circumstantial stuff linking at least three of them.
Yeah, well, Paul Bickford and
Tony, maybe even the fourth guy, because the washer repairman was supposed to be in the same area as him.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, that the washing repairman could have had the inside information, and the other guys could have gone over with or without his knowledge.
Yeah.
If they were involved in some kind of child pornography ring, then...
Yeah.
They would have known each other through that, and they might tip each other off about things like this, as horrifying as that is. Could be.
That's true. I think the right people are identified as persons of interest.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure there's a lot more the police know that we don't know.
I'll bet there is.
Yeah. So additionally, it's been reported that both of these men, Paul Bickford and Tony Jones, that they had been driving vehicles matching the two cars. This is what we were talking about earlier. The two cars seen near William's grandmother's house that were parked between the driveways.
Mm-hmm.
The two men deny being friends and deny any involvement in William's disappearance.
Well, of course you would.
But one of them had a gray sedan, an older gray sedan, and one of them had the white station wagon, four-wheel drive, whatever it was.
Okay.
So, I guess they didn't know right away because whoever had the white car... that Tony Jones, I think, had gotten rid of it, had given it away.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea. If eyewitnesses are talking about seeing a white car or a white wagon or something.
Right.
I'd get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so pedophilia, it's disturbing, and it seems that it may have a role in this crime. So I was going to have you give us a little information on it, just, you know, from a pediatrician, a medical opinion, what can you tell us about it? Is there treatment for it? Should they be allowed out of prison ever? What do we do with these people? Because they are people. We need to figure out how to live with them and how to protect children from them.
Okay.
Okay.
The quick answer is that people that prey on children should be locked up forever.
Okay.
My opinion.
Okay.
Anyway, so pedophilia is a psychiatric disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in which an adult or an older adolescent experiences a sexual attraction to prepubescent children. And in this definition, prepubescent is up to the age of 13.
Okay.
So the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, abbreviated as DSM, and there's a fifth edition, so it's the DSM-5. Defines pedophilia as an intense and recurrent sexual urge about prepubescent children that have either been acted upon or caused distress for the person affected with it. It was first formally recognized and named in the late 19th century. Since the 1980s, there's been a significant amount of research on the subject.
Yeah, what have they found out?
Well, they've found out a lot.
Okay.
The one thing is that it's mostly documented in men, but there are also women who suffer from it.
Yes, sure.
And a lot of researchers feel that the numbers of women are underrepresented, that there's actually more women that are pedophiles than is thought. I mean,
most people
think of this as almost exclusively male.
Yes.
But there's probably a lot more females.
Well, yeah. What about people like that Mary Kay Letourneau? Wouldn't she be a pedophile? Because he was like in fifth grade when she fell in love with him.
And how
wouldn't
old
that
is she?
Qualify? Well, 30s or 40s. She's an adult.
That would qualify.
Yeah. So these people aren't really labeled as pedophiles like these men are.
No.
No. So I think there is a double standard when it comes to women.
Well, yeah. And I think if you look closer at the statistics, there's probably a lot more women than is believed. But it's still not exclusively male, but predominantly male.
Sure. We don't know why.
We don't know why.
Okay.
And we also have no evidence that it can be cured.
Now, what about castration? Wouldn't that cure a man of pedophilia?
No.
Really? Why not?
But we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
So castration, by whatever means, and I'll talk about it a little bit more later, can reduce the drive, but not the orientation.
Okay.
Okay, so you might not feel as much like having sex with a child.
Yes.
But it doesn't remove the desire to have sex with the child.
Okay. I thought it would take away all sexual.
It takes away the drive, but not the desire.
What's the difference? Tell me the difference between drive and desire.
It takes away the ability to have sex with the person, with the child.
Okay.
But not the desire.
Really? Okay. So the desire is something psychological that can't be fixed physically.
Can't be fixed.
Okay.
I mean, the best therapy now, I'll talk about that later, but right now, the first thing that people look at is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
CBT.
Yeah.
And this aims to reduce the attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors that may increase the likelihood of sexual offenses against children.
Okay.
So a typical program might involve training on self-control, on social competence and empathy, and might use cognitive restructuring to change views on sex with children. So that's all gobbledygook for lessening your attraction to children and strengthening your attraction to older people.
Okay.
And then there's behavioral interventions.
Okay.
Which is kind of the same thing. It uses satiation and aversion techniques to suppress sexual arousal in children, and it uses sensitization techniques to increase the sexual arousal for adults.
Now that makes me kind of think of like a Clockwork Orange type situation, where you're forced to watch something awful and until you're sickened by it.
Right. And again, there's no evidence, no compelling evidence that these things work.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like they would. Just from a layperson's view, it doesn't sound like it would do any good, really.
Right. And it hasn't, or apparently hasn't.
Yeah.
So, and then there's methods to reduce the sexual drive.
Okay.
So there's pharmacologic interventions.
Which would be chemical castration.
Which are what people call chemical castration.
What does that do?
So what it does is it reduces the amount of male hormones, or in case of women, female hormones that are secreted. And this makes it less likely to want to have sex, or to try to have sex.
Okay.
I didn't explain that well. It reduces the drive.
Yes, but the desire is still there.
The desire is still there.
Okay.
And most of the time, a person who is undergoing therapy, chemical castration therapy, is also undergoing cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
So it's a combination of the two things to try to help, not just to reduce the drive, but to reduce the desire.
Okay.
But again, there's no evidence that it works.
Now, are these things that can be forced upon a person once they're convicted, or is this something they have to do by choice because they want to change?
Well, it can be both ways.
Okay.
I mean, some courts will mandate the treatment.
Yes.
Which might not always be what the person wants, but other people might actively pursue it for their own desires to help them.
Yes. Okay.
And then, I mean, and you talk about castration, there's always surgical castration,
yeah,
which is not used as much these days because it's obviously a more invasive procedure.
Yes.
In terms of removing testicles or removing ovaries.
Well, a lot of people say, oh, just castrate him. But
yeah, but
he still might do things to children.
You have chemicals that can do that.
Right.
And in any case, without other therapy, it doesn't reduce the desire.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't want to sound gloomy, but there doesn't seem to be any effective therapy for treatment.
Okay.
Which is why I recommend just keeping them locked up.
Yeah, it seems like that's the best course.
But of course, that's not in their civil liberties. Best interest.
Well, the thing about that is you don't know until they've already hurt someone.
Right.
Is there any way to find this out when someone's younger? I guess there's no gene discovered.
There's no gene. There's no predictive thing.
What about childhood sexual abuse? Is that more likely to make that person grow up and offend? I've heard that.
Well, the short answer is that any form of abuse can fuck a kid up.
Yeah.
So whether it's sexual abuse, other forms of physical abuse, verbal abuse, you're more likely to have a child who's psychologically damaged.
Which could include becoming a pedophile. Okay.
And there's no real effective screening procedure. I mean, as pediatricians, we screen children starting around age 10 or so for psychiatric illnesses.
Okay.
But things might not always be apparent from the screening procedure.
Of course. Yeah, nothing's perfect.
Right.
But what about priests? Do we have any research on why there were so many pedophiles in the priesthood? Have you heard anything about that?
I have not.
Oh, okay. I think a lot of people think that that's just because they're not having sex, they're not married, but that doesn't make any sense.
No, I think that's been disproven, that because they're celibate, they want to have sex with kids.
Right. And homosexuals are no more likely to be pedophiles than heterosexuals, which is another misnomer.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, you can be homosexual, heterosexual, or whatever sexual.
Right. That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You can still be a pedophile.
Yeah. Okay.
So pedophilia does not equal homosexuality.
No, and I think that that was an old-time belief. That was something that they were holding against.
Yeah.
Homosexuals.
I think you're looking at the priesthood, and that's, I think, where the idea got started, that you're a gay priest that likes to screw little kids.
Yeah.
But
that's not the case.
That's not the case.
No. But I still wonder why so many priests did abuse children. I wonder, yeah. It seems like maybe they were attracted to the priesthood because of that. Maybe they saw this abnormality in themselves and thought, well, if I become a priest, that'll protect me.
That's possible. Or maybe they were abused by a priest and they grew up thinking that was okay.
Yeah.
And they're going to become a priest.
So you're talking about something kind of widespread in the whole Catholic community, which I don't know if you want to go there.
Oh, I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah. So we don't really know.
No.
Okay. But thanks for that. That information was interesting. It was a little disappointing. I thought it was more physically treatable than...
I wish I could report something excellent to you. Yeah. But, I mean, there are some studies that support treatment and show success, and there's an equal number of studies that don't. So there's nothing definitive either way that says there's an effective treatment for pedophilia.
Yeah, so we still have a long way to go.
We do.
But I think that these guys definitely seem to have some kind of connection, and the cars are similar, so definitely is something to think about. I can see why they're the persons of interest.
I think that if they're named as the persons of interest, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And that some or more than one or two or three, or maybe all four, but they're involved.
Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah.
There have been some reported sightings of William Tyrrell. In 2015, William's parents made a personal plea to members of state parliament, to the deputy premier, and the minister of justice. The family spokesperson said, "They just want to reinforce that police believe William could still be alive, and they are asking members of the public not to give up on him." So, if the pedophile ring is, you know, legitimate, if that's what's going on here, and he's still alive being held by this ring, that's almost as awful a thought as him being killed.
It's
something really tough to live with.
I mean, I would rather have the thought that he was taken by somebody that wanted a child.
Yes.
And he was being raised by a family that might actually love him or care for him.
Well, that's really their only hope. There have been a record number of calls to Crime Stoppers since William disappeared, and the police have interviewed more than 1,000 people in connection with this case. Yet, despite all these efforts, investigators and forensics have not found any trace of William. Not one thing.
Yeah, my suspicion is that he's probably not alive any longer, just because despite all these sightings, there's nothing that's credible shown up yet.
Nothing's been proved, no.
Yeah.
In February of this year, the police spokesperson said that they have not given up on finding William alive, that it is possible. But like you said, the best case scenario for William's family is that William was taken by someone who wanted a child to raise as his or her own, right?
Right.
And in this case, it's possible that he's being cared for and loved, and that there's hope that he could be found alive and brought back home.
Well, that's a lot more palatable than the other alternative.
Well, absolutely.
So.
But unfortunately, the police think it's more likely that William was taken to be sexually abused and possibly killed. And this is a truly heartbreaking scenario, especially for his parents.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I don't know how they deal with it. It's really tough. Now, that neighborhood, there were 21 homes in that neighborhood. So it's a cul-de-sac with 21 homes. And residents all have a pretty good view of each other. If you look at the neighborhood, like from the aerial view, the street, they all have a good view of the street, and they can pretty much all see each other's yards as well. But at the same time, these people are comfortable with their neighbors, and they're not suspiciously, you know, looking out their windows to see what's going on. So
right.
Nobody saw anything that day.
Well, they saw something. They saw a couple cars that didn't belong there.
True. Yep. They
and
did.
People reported that. But
yes.
Yeah, I mean, nobody saw an actual abduction or anything like that.
No. Or they didn't see anyone racing away or doing anything blatantly suspicious. No. But his parents it seems like they've done everything right. His disappearance can be narrowed down to like a 5-minute time period. And they contacted the police in less than an hour of his disappearance.
Right.
So it just goes to show you, even if you do everything right, you're not safe.
No, you're not.
No. So in an interview in the Newcastle Herald that I read, a Kendall neighbor named Rhiannon Chapman said that the neighborhood has definitely changed. Children are not walking home from school anymore. Many mothers are picking up their children from a bus stop that's less than 100 meters from their front doors. She also says there's an obvious decrease in children playing in the street or in the front yards. She says that William's story has truly broken the heart of the entire town.
Yeah, I'll bet it has.
Yeah.
Like you said, this This is like a very narrow window of opportunity, and you're thinking, as a parent of a child, this could happen to one of our kids in blink of an eye.
That's what I mean about them doing everything right. It's not like they were negligent.
No. It's not like the kid went missing and the next day they decided to report it.
It's not really possible to have your eyes on your child every single second of every single day.
It's not, but you do what you can.
Yeah. And it seems like people are doing a lot more than they used to because they don't have the same comfort level.
Sure.
They're terrified. There was one more sighting for an update on August 8th. New Zealand police have investigated two sightings of William Tyrrell, it says. A police spokeswoman said one reported sighting was definitely not William, but the second one has not been disproved. So all information of this sighting in New Zealand has been handed over to the Australian police.
Okay.
So
I'm just wondering, it's almost 2 years now.
Yes.
So are people just reporting any little blonde boy as a possible sighting? I mean,
I don't know.
How can you even think of what this kid would look like 2 years from the time he was abducted?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of little kids look alike. It was the same thing with the Dior Kuntz case.
Yeah.
I mean, a 2-3-year-old boy, in a couple of years, they're not recognizable.
No.
So it's really hard for, I think it's pretty much impossible for someone to find him just by seeing him.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously you have to investigate those.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's going to ever be anything that comes out of that.
Yeah, well, there's always the possibility of, like, a neighbor or a family member all of a sudden having a new kid.
Right. Now, that's a different story.
Yeah, but you think that would have been found out within 2 years.
I think that would have been found out sooner.
Someone would have said something sooner.
Yeah.
Although maybe someone just hasn't come forward. And if that's the case, they should. And they still have a chance to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe someone knows that there was a suspicious adoption or whatever in their family or someone they work with or something.
Well, again, that's kind of the best case scenario.
Yeah, but it doesn't hurt to think that way sometimes. It makes you feel better.
Makes you feel better.
Yeah. It is possible. So there are some ways that you can help in the search. You can go to whereswilliam.org, find out more about it. You can also go to Crime Stoppers if you have any information. You would go to crimestoppers.com.au. And, of course, this is mostly to our Australian listeners because most people in the U.S. aren't going to have any information about this case, although it is a global search now.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess it would have to be.
Yeah.
2 years after the fact, it could be anywhere on Earth.
It could be anywhere. That's right. And also I wanted to mention the Wednesdays for William. Now, that is on Twitter. You do hashtag Wednesdays for William. There's a minor celebrity named Zoe Palmer, who I'd never heard of, but she's in a TV show, Dark Matters or Dark Matter, and she, every Wednesday, has been putting up a tweet, putting up William's picture to try and keep the story alive, keep people thinking about William. So we're going to be doing that, too. And that's why we decided to do that this Wednesday, try and bring some attention to the search for William.
A great idea.
Yeah, I thought so. So that's about all the info I have on the case. Have you got anything you'd like to add?
I have nothing else to add.
Okay.
Except that I think for me, naming these people as persons of interest indicates that an arrest might be coming up fairly soon.
I hope so. I'm hoping that they're being watched and that there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Right.
It's usually how it works.
Yeah.
So I hope if they are responsible that we do find out something soon.
For sure.
Even if it's bad news, I guess it's better to know.
It's closure. It's better to know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know. Closure's real.
Well, that's a whole other topic, but at least you have an explanation.
Yeah, at least you don't have to worry and wonder where he is.
Right.
Yeah, even if you find out something horrible happened to him.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thanks a lot for looking up that information for me. That was helpful. I really like to get some extra information when I can about things I don't know much about or that I've made assumptions about, which I had a lot of incorrect assumptions about it.
Not really.
No, a few.
A few minor ones.
Okay. Well, thank you, and let's wrap it up for tonight.
It's a wrap.
Okay.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Hug your children.